Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva. Hey, friends and lovers, it's Eva here with a solo intro today. Kylie has bravely packed her two kids and taken a solo trip over to Maine. So she wanted me to pass on a few things to you. Just some housekeeping stuff before we introduce our wonderful guest for this week and another soulful, down-to-earth, sassy, silly podcast episode. Okay, so first things first, sign up and application to work with me in 2021 is now open. As you know, if you've been listening to the podcast, there's been some really deep, soulful incubation happening on my end with a lot of things happening in the background, a lot of transformation, a lot of what feels like alchemy, a lot of rest that's been really beautiful. I'm bubbling over because at this point, all of this stuff has gotten downloaded essentially. And like, I want to share it with y'all, but I think that's going to take a whole episode. So tune in next week because Kylie and I are having a Kylie and Eva episode where I'm going to share everything. Because there's an intention here, like me sharing, I think is actually like the things that I think have come up for me are things that I think are going to be really important for the collective to hear for, at this point. I just think so much of it is going to be really helpful to have me walk you through some of this transformation that's been happening. That's been incredibly profound and powerful, and also is making a big difference in the coaching and the work that I do. So if you're interested in that, tune in next week. Or you can find out more about my one-on-one coaching at evaliao.com. And if you're not already, come follow me on Instagram at badbitchliving. Okay. And Kylie. So Kylie is in the middle of launching her program, Magnetize Your Launch. So this is for people who are in the biz. Like if you're a coach, if you're a healer and you already have a biz and you want to learn how to launch in a way that feels easeful, but is still effective, Kylie is your girl. You guys know Kylie. She's super down to earth. She makes things tangible, easy to understand, where you don't feel like you have to like sell your soul as you're doing the business end of things, right? And if you're not in a business, if this isn't for you, just know that like as coaches, as we're running our business and doing these launches, sometimes they can feel really, they can be challenging. They can be stressful. And they can also be like a huge up-leveling as well. And Kylie, I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking through her sales page right now and she really just breaks down the foundations of this in a really beautiful way. Okay. So if you are interested, let's see. The early bird special that actually ends tomorrow on February 4th. If you don't get on the early bird, you have until the 12th of this month to sign up, and classes meet every Sunday at 2 p.m. So if you're a businessy biz person, you're in the biz, you want to learn how to do launches because launches are, you know, so important, such an important aspect of the business. Get in touch with Kylie. You can find her at kyliecaudwell.com. Whew. All right. Let's get into it this week. So our guest is Chrissy Papetti, who is a self-mastery mentor, success coach, and speaker who fuses the mystic and the scientific, which you guys know we love around here. We cover so much ground in this episode. Chrissy tells her amazing story about how she, in her adolescence, had like dedicated her life to dance. And then she got an accident, which then, you know, totally transformed her life. And she had to, follow a completely different path to get to where she is now. We talk about gene keys. So Chrissy also breaks down what gene keys are for us. So Kylie and I didn't know what gene keys are. So if you don't know, that's fine too, because Chrissy does an amazing job of explaining it, how you can use it, how this benefits you. There's a book that goes with it. We talk all about that. And then there's also, a really beautiful conversation about purpose. It's the kind of conversation about purpose that I really enjoy, because I think purpose can sometimes get distorted where it becomes like this whole ego trip thing where people get like really freaked out and stressed out because they feel like they don't have a purpose. And this isn't that, like it's the opposite of that. It's Chrissy being able to sort of take the anxiety out of it and help make it feel easeful. And yeah, this will all make more sense when you start listening to it. If you haven't already, we would so appreciate it if you could like, subscribe to the show, share it with your friends, and all those good things. All right. We hope you enjoy.
Chrissy, we're so happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you both.
Yeah, so we've both been really looking forward to this. And as you know, we just jump right into the deep end, which is our first question, which is, what does spirituality mean for you and how does it show up in your everyday life?
Such a good question. And I feel like my mind goes in a million directions, but I think if I were to really sink down my answer, spirituality is really for me about exploring and connecting with a higher power, like the intangible forces, and that can really enhance the meaning of our existence and what we're here to do. And so I really connect spirituality with just deepening a sense of purpose, deepening a sense of meaning in one's life, and just exploring all the different realms of what that can be. And so, you know, I really think it's like a deeply personal path, but I also think it's what like inextricably links all of us together too. Mm-hmm. So I find that to be just a really rewarding area of life to explore and just delve into. Mm-hmm.
Can you say a little bit more about how the higher power shows up in your everyday life, or even like how you, examples of when you followed that and where that's guided you to?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I grew up, you know, in a more religious upbringing where, you know, my family was Christian and, you know, we attended church every Sunday and it was that type of thing. And so it was a nice way to connect with my family, but I never really felt connected to the teachings within that religion per se, but it kind of, I always was thinking of, there was a God, right, to connect with and to sort of lead with. And as I've gotten older and as I've sort of taken my own spiritual path, I feel like I now see it showing up in my life in terms of like synchronicities, or feeling like I'm being divinely guided in a given moment, or feeling like a body sensation that's really tapping into some sort of intuitive intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so I think it now, I just see it as sort of getting out of my mind into my body and just seeing things show up around me that are really linked to something I thought about earlier or something that came up another day. And I just like start seeing all those patterns showing up. So that's kind of how I like know when I feel like I'm being divinely guided in a particular direction. It's like a very intuitive experience.
Yeah. Mm. This is a question kind of out of the blue for both of y'all, not just for Chrissy, but I think that my question is, because I think I've been experiencing some of this recently or noticing patterns. When do you guys tend to fall out of being guided? Meaning, I feel like there are times when I know when I'm being guided because I'm listening, but then sometimes I'll like find myself way over here feeling like disconnected. And I'm like, wait, what happened? You know, like where, like bringing back what you said, Chrissy, I find myself in mind again. And I didn't even know that I was in mind. And I just like forgot that, oh wait, there's this whole other way to live life. I could be connected. And I'm curious, you know, I'm assuming that happens to many of us, right? And I'm curious if you guys could speak on that.
Oh my God, that's such a good question. I'm totally going to make our guest answer it first.
Sure, I'll jump into the deep end. Why not?
How's that for hospitality?
Yes. I actually really love this question too. I think that, you know, to bridge off of what I did say, I think that it's those moments where we are in our mind. And honestly, when we're in our mind, we are living in the past or the future usually. Right. Mm-hmm, yeah. So it's like having the same thoughts from yesterday, you know, thinking about things from the past that informed what you're thinking about now. Right. Or you're like worrying about and dwelling in and fearing things in the future or just being anxious about that. And so anytime I'm in that mode of like dwelling on what's coming next or like simmering what's in the past, I know like, ooh, that is a, you know, I'm disconnected. That is disconnecting me, because we know that being present, which is fundamentally hard for human beings, right? So it's like very normal that we're pulled out of the present, but being present is what is really is like, I guess you would say that frequency or that zone where we really do connect with a higher power, where we do really connect with ourselves on the deepest level. Mm-hmm. So that's how I really see it sort of mapped out, is like whenever we're like in the past or future, you know, you're kind of being pulled away. Mm-hmm. And whenever you can bring yourself back to the present moment, that's where the magic is, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally right. And I think the piece I'd layer on is I've been noticing in myself, it really comes down to control. Like I'll be in a place like of, you know, feeling really like in surrender and kind of trust, and in that space, I can be in the present moment, and I'm like with my kids or whatever. I'm just in it, and I can feel. It's like you mentioned, you said the phrase like a bodily sensation, and that's it. Often shows up for me as a kind of bodily knowing, and then I am trying to control the outcome, right? I'm like, I've claimed this thing that I want, and then I'm just thinking about whether or not it's going to happen, and like how to game the system to make it happen, which A is like all just a series of roadblocks for the very thing that I want. And also mm-hmm. that like is like what yanks me out of the present moment. I'm sure there's other things, but I think that's like my like number one vice is just kind of this control thinking mind of like, I got to get the game plan because otherwise it won't happen. Mm-hmm. And then to your point, I'm either looking backwards to try to like rewrite things, or I'm looking forwards with like kind of worry and trepidation. And so I'm trying when I notice it to just be like, my job is not the how, like my job is not to control, like my job is to sit here and build blocks or color unicorns.
Yeah. I love these answers so much. And I feel like, Kylie, what you said about, yeah, wanting to control the outcome, which is the same thing as also when we're in past or in future, we're trying to either change something about the past or control the future. It just made me see how true that is for me too. And I would say to add to that, and the reason I ask is because I feel like in the new year, and then yeah, like at the end of 2020 and then the beginning of this new year, I've really been allowing myself to just like, I've been going inward, and I've been having this very beautiful experience of just being in the moment, following my body, listening to my intuition. And then I'm looking back being like, how do I get disconnected? Because I kind of want to like really stay in here in this zone. And I think for me, it's so much of the information that I'm taking in. I need to be very careful about like guarding my sphere of what I take in, because then it influences me to be like, I should be doing this, or it disconnects me from, yeah, listening to myself. I'm listening to like other things. So I mean, it's a bit of a non sequitur, but I thought.
I love that. I love that. Totally relate.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
relate to that.
By that body knowing that you mentioned, Chrissy, that shows up with me when it comes to consuming information lately. Like I'll start reading an article and my body is just like, this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Like, just so yeah. you know, we're against this. You know, yeah. Sometimes I listen and sometimes I know.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah. So have you always, Chrissy, felt like you had kind of this sensation of knowing, or is something you really had to cultivate?
No, it's been something I've really had to cultivate. And I think, you know, especially when talking about spirituality, I feel like a lot of us can probably identify with a time like before we were awake and like after we're awake, you know what I mean? Of just mm-hmm. like coming to realize like, oh, there's so much more than just this yeah. that I've yeah. been focusing on for my whole life. Cause I think every child, right, gets that expansion when they get older and start realizing that like their life is not just all that there is. And so, you know, I think up until, I mean, I would say up until high school, and then yeah, up until high school, I would say I was just sort of like doing my thing, right? Like living my life that I had always been living. And then once I went to college and things started to kind of peel back, it was so interesting because my body was screaming at me on so many fronts for so many different things. And we can go down that rabbit hole if we want, but it just, I like didn't know what an intuition was. Like I did not know how to like trust that or like honor my body, because I was so like in my head. It was very much like, this is who I am. I like meet these standards. I strive for excellence. Like I will always do it all. I can do anything. Like, yeah. you know what I mean? And so all of that like mental chatter that so much came from societal conditioning just propelled me until I finally hit like a physical wall. And my body was like, no, you know, you can't. And it was that rock bottom moment of being like, oh, I actually can't just push and like bulldoze my way through this. And so that was like my journey of really unpacking so many layers of the mind and getting back into my body. So it's been something I've like radically had to cultivate, but not that that has to be hard, because I feel like once you start to really honor and tap in it, you really can start to get a sense of how you work. But it was just a long journey for me because there was so much mental baggage to clear personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this how you started with the gene keys? Is there like a relation between the work that you're doing now and that process?
Yeah, a little bit. Like Gene Keys kind of came a little bit later, but it totally led me there in the sense that, you know, just to give a little bit more specificity, I was like a hardcore dancer my whole life. I went to college for dance. It was like my whole identity. And I got injured halfway through my college career.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, you know, not to be dramatic, but like feels like a death sentence in some ways, because you're just like, my entire life flips upside down. So it kind of unraveled me. Like it was almost like the house of cards that was holding up around this version of me just came like crumbling down.
Yeah.
And that propelled, I mean, this whole journey of like physical recovery, mental recovery, emotional recovery, right? And so all of that eventually led me to spirituality and how important that is, and like trusting in a higher power when you're going through the depths of such hard stuff, right?
Yeah, like an existential crisis on top of like physical discomfort, and you're just like an identity crisis. You're like, I don't even know who I am anymore because you've built your whole world around that.
Yeah. So you're like, why is this happening? And if you don't start to connect with something greater, you live in that victim mentality. You're like, life is happening to me. I have no control. I have no say. Right. And that was my story for a really long time until I finally like reached like a deeper rock bottom. And I was like, I can't, like, I'm postponing my life, waiting for something to get fixed, and it's not working. Mm-hmm. And that's when I took my like view from looking for answers outside of myself to learning about how much freaking power I have over my mind, like what I was creating. Like I was creating the very reality I was trying to escape. And I just like did not know that.
How did that like kind of pivot show up for you? Because that's like a really dramatic turn, and I think can feel really inaccessible. Like I think I'm sure there's some people who are listening who are like, okay, I keep hearing this, and some part of me believes it. And also I can't access this thing you're talking about power. And so, the question is, it's a big question. And so you probably, I mean, people write whole books around this, right? But what is that? Like, how did that pivot show up for you that all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I think I have more power than I have been giving myself credit for.
Yeah. Mm. Can I add to that? Cause I feel like it's on parallel question is like understanding your own power. And I also think connecting to a higher power, which is also what I heard you say, which was like what got you out of the victim mentality and into like, oh, there's something greater here, which even as I'm talking, I'm like, maybe those two things are parallel. Like understanding that there's something greater there is also the same thing that helps you understand your own power. So
Yeah, no, but like different things, but absolutely related. So I like both questions. So I had like a very distinct memory of when this shift happened. So I threw my hands in the air. I said, I can't keep doing this. At this point I was, by the way, after my injury, had like a five plus years of just chronic pain. Actually it was like 7 years total of just chronic pain. So I had surgery the whole nine. I tried every medical solution in the books, cortisone injections, PT, acupuncture, like everything, and nothing fixed my pain. And so that's when I just was like, I guess I'm going to be a young 20-year-old with chronic pain. And that is what it is. And I finally was like, I guess I'm going to go talk to someone about this. And so my pivot happened when I was talking to my incredible sports psychologist, and he gave me, at the time I had back pain. So my hip pain was like coming into my back and I was like, I'm just drowning in pain. And he's like, read this book by Dr. John Sarno. It's called Healing Back Pain. I think this is really going to resonate with you. Let's just start here. And I read the whole thing in like a blip, which is, I'm not a fast reader, but I like could not take my eyes off of it. And essentially the whole book is about how so much physical pain is actually a result of emotional repression and like emotion-based root causes. And it was talking about like his success stories with his clients where like just educating them on how pain actually works in the body and how it was an emotional root, like freed them of pain. And I was like, what? And so not only did I read that book, and in 2 weeks, my back pain went away.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah. Just like gone, literally never came back. But that sparked me to read his other mind body, you know, connection books, that sparked me to read like Dr. Joe Dispenza, like all these like other big names in the realms of, it's like, truly, this is where, you know, you're being divinely guided, right? All of a sudden podcast episodes would pop up about this stuff. Like, this is what I mean, right? Like all of a sudden now you see everything around you where it's like, oh my goodness, like we our emotional state and our mental state have so much of a role. And for me, I was so focused on the physical pain that that's what the switch was for me. I was like, oh, I'm causing my physical pain, not realizing I was causing my anxiety. I was causing my depression, right? I was causing like so many other things, but that was the big connection for me that like, I cannot get over how much of our mental and emotional state impacts our physical well-being. And so that just like led me down the rabbit hole of being like, wow, I have so much power. Mm. And then to answer your question, Eva, like I started to just get more into there's an intangible component, right, of all of that. Like when you're talking about mastering your mind and your body, it's not so tangible. Like it's not like take this pill or, you know, get this injection. It's like you're doing work where you're tapping into the subconscious mind and you're getting into different brainwave states. And so it opens up that door to being like, not everything is always going to be so black and white. Like some of this is going to be gray. And it led me down that route of like all the mind body stuff that has such a spiritual element to it. And that's when I was like, ooh, there's not just science. There's this like whole spiritual side, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense. Oh my God. Such a great story. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry to hear about your injury, but also it just seems to have opened up a totally different door for you, which, you know, is sometimes how it happens.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment and then you can ask a question, just, I think it's really compelling because so many times we have this like, there's moments where our faith is shaken or we like doubt, you know, our own power or that we're connected to something. And I feel like in those moments, I always want to reach out and like touch these moments that remind me like, nope, this shit is real. It's like, you know, like there's the rock in your pocket, you know? And so I love that like chronic back pain disappearing in 2 weeks feels like the ultimate like rock in your pocket of like, nope, this is real. And so that feels like a really beautiful anchor to have, although it costs you 7 years of being in chronic pain. So that must bring you comfort in moments where you're like, oh shit, I can actually do anything or anything is possible.
Oh yeah. Thank you for that. And yeah, it was like that superpower moment of being like, whoa, you know, there's something here. And then that's when it took me closer to a year, but I healed my chronic hip pain and it was like, okay, like there's something here.
Wow. Okay. So that's what I want to ask you about is that, I mean, goodness, chronic pain. I just know that there are listeners out there who are struggling with chronic pain or just, you know, some type of chronic physical discomfort. Cause that's so prevalent now just in our society, either because of like just a gazillion different reasons. And I feel like it'd be amiss if I didn't ask you, like, I guess to talk a little bit more about that journey. I think these books are really great, but it was more like, do you really feel like your chronic pain was not all mental, but can you talk about the connection between what was going on mentally that then worsened the physical pain?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So what happened was, you know, an understanding that I was so fixated mentally on, like we're saying, my identity. I had certain beliefs, you know, that I just had from my upbringing that I just wasn't letting go of and didn't like, wasn't aware of. Right. And all of that was causing me, I mean, your beliefs create your reality, right? So what you're believing is then going to dictate what you're thinking in any given moment, then therefore what you decide, what you act on and the results that come from that. And then it just loops. Right. And so, you know, yeah, those books were amazing because they gave me that education to be like, I'm such a huge believer in like education to transformation, right? Like people need to know how things work because then the buy-in is that much greater. So
yes,
I'm all about like, tell them the science, right? Like give everyone the science, give everyone the know-how and the education, because then when that buy-in is there, then you can say, all right, this could be hard, but I'm going to like, now I know why dismantling or changing my beliefs works. Now I know why, you know, emotional regulation is something that's important. Like we hear all these words being like thrown around left and right. I feel like in the wellness world these days, and it's like, everyone's right. Like these things are powerful and they can change your life. But if people don't like understand why, it's sometimes hard to, they're all just buzzwords, right? And it's like breath work, yoga, you know?
I'm very much like, because I'm very mind though, I'm very much love to understand why. Like I want to like dissect and understand and know why. That's particularly helpful for me, for sure.
Yeah. Yes. I love that. So I'm that way too. And so I feel like first it was like education. Then it was the transformation of four different quadrants that now to completely guide how I coach people. So the first one is mindset. So this is the examining and dismantling beliefs and reestablishing new ones on a subconscious level, right? Like really getting into the neuroplasticity and shifting our beliefs through like a deep meditative state. And then, so I went through that own experience with my therapist and then further coaches that I explored their work within. And then the second tier is identity. Like, obviously that was a huge part of my story. I mean, our self-image that we hold is so important. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the book Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. Mm-mm. It's a really good one. And he talks all about how we only act in accordance with who we believe ourselves to be, right? Mm-hmm. Not who we are, who we believe ourselves to be. Mm-hmm. And so if we have an identity that is largely influenced and colored by our upbringing and technically other people, right? We're walking around like as a fragmented version of ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Like we all reach that moment where we're like, wait, who am I? Who am I? Like, what am I doing? You know, I feel like especially like in your 20s and, you know, further on in your life, you just start to ask these more existential questions. And I feel like if you don't have an avenue to explore your identity and really cultivate one that's in alignment with you, you just run into a lot of situations that try to nudge you back on track and get you back into alignment, right? So I think finding your identity just provides more flow for your life. And that was true in my experience, because I was like, who am I besides a dancer? I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. And then the other two components really quick are energy. So like understanding like mastery of your nervous system, bringing your nervous system on board as your ally. So this is like that emotional regulation, understanding how fear works in your body and like the different states we can fluctuate in and how to really like master that mm-hmm. in your body so that you are always in control of your state, even if there's something else that causes you to, you know, jump into a fear-based place. And then the last one is purpose. Right? Like coming back to what we said in the beginning, like purpose, we are purpose-driven beings. Like we thrive on a sense of like having something to do or someone or being something. Right. And so I firmly believe that purpose isn't like a thing. Like, I don't think we're all here. Like, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a teacher. Like, I don't believe in that, but I firmly believe that our purpose can take on many vehicles, which is what that is, but it's all about how we want to feel at the end of the day. Like what emotions are you seeking and what avenues or what vehicles seem to be providing or like lighting that up within you and pursuing that. So those four things were a part of my rehabilitative journey that I so firmly believe, like once you have the education around, you can then cultivate and facilitate the transformation around.
Yeah. And so do you feel like that's what happened in terms of like healing and then understanding these things internally, was the correlation that direct? Like once you felt internally more peaceful, was the external pain and the physical pain healed in that way? Like, was it that direct? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally know what you mean. You know, it's so interesting, right? Cause it's like, I would like love to go back in time and just see how that all, cause it's like, you don't really know. So it's like a hindsight perspective, right? But yeah. I do know that all four of those things were kind of working out all around the same time. And what I will say is that it was fairly direct in that once for me, I think the biggest catalysts were like when I first understood, you know, my mind, like how big of a role my mind was playing. And then I started to really tap into a newfound sense of purpose and identity that were very correlated for me. That was like a direct unraveling of my physical pain and a direct like reconstruction of my emotional, you know, capacity and like what I was existing in, which was like very fear-based and victim-y. And then I like was able to elevate and step more into myself. So I do think it was fairly direct. But yeah, it's kind of like, it was just such an ebb and flow of getting from where I was then to where I am now.
Yeah.
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 Oh, it's amazing. So, okay. I think as you're starting to talk a little bit about the work you do, this feels like a good time to ask the question even I had both written down, which is please explain to us what gene keys are.
Yeah.
And also yes. Like, tell us a little bit of what you do, but in particular, this is this phrase that I keep hearing and I'm just really curious to actually understand it.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, like high level, really quick, what I do, I help people cultivate self-mastery. So if you were to like take everything I just explained and put it into one thing, it's really being masterful, like over yourself, in all these different dimensions within us that we can take, you know, have influence over. And, so it's really about giving that power back, right? We source our own power. So gene keys played a really exciting and powerful role in that journey for me. And so for those of you who don't know gene keys, as well as Eva and Kylie, many people, it's I always like to say it's like a sister system to human design, if you're familiar with that. And if you're not, it is similar to human design in that they are both self-discovery systems, right? They're ways of getting to understand yourself better. And they're both based on the same kind of ancient wisdom and modern science. So ancient wisdom being, you know, the Chinese I Ching, astrology, like these different sort of more spiritual elements that come from different, you know, backgrounds. And then modern science, which is like epigenetics, right? Like the fact that we can influence our genes by like our attitude and our mood and what kind of like environment we're cultivating in our body, and quantum physics, like the intangible energetic, you know, world around us and how we're learning so much more in that realm and how it works. So Gene Keys in particular is like a self-discovery system that gives you a roadmap to understanding what specific like shadow, so he calls it shadow frequencies, what specific challenges or like fear-based victim sort of like frequencies are you like likely going to face in your life? And specifically, what is the, he calls it the gift within that, which is the higher frequency that's ultimately leading you to.
Mm. And based on your example, use an example of what the, you know, just to anchor in that concept for people.
Totally. Yeah. Let's give a quick example. So for example, one of my gene keys is the shadow of half-heartedness and the gift of commitment. And so let me explain that really quick. So in my life, I have been somebody who, I've always just internalized that I must be, you know, flaky or, you know, scattered, or I can't just stick with one thing. Right. And so the way that I've internalized that was like very like this half-heartedness, right? I never felt like I could fully commit into something. And that was kind of making me flip from one thing to the next. And it was caused so much pain and strife because like, I wouldn't be able to like make progress anywhere, but then I'd be down on myself because I'm now on it to a new thing. And it was very, very all over the place. And
I feel deeply, deeply seen. Carry on.
Good. Okay. I'm not the only one. I feel a lot better.
Oh, I think this is a lot of people can probably relate to this. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. So the thing is when you're in that zone, you know, it's this like lower based frequency, right? It's kind of pulling again you out of the present moment. You're not really like sinking in. And so what ultimately the gene keys stipulates is that there is a gift hidden in where that's showing up in your life. So I was being particularly half-hearted in terms of my career path, in terms of what I was choosing to like dedicate my time and energy to. And so what I was realizing was that it was actually trying to lead me to the gift of commitment. And that doesn't mean just like, gosh, Chrissy, just commit to it already and like stick with something. It was more like what lights you up, and then it's actually safe for you to commit. Mm-hmm. It's safe for you to not have this always like, well, if I choose A, what's going to happen to B? Or like, if I go with B, what if A was really the right? Because that's a fear-based frequency, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what was triggering the half-heartedness. I couldn't just choose because there was always this fear of leaving one behind. And so it was saying, what lights you up in this present moment, trust you can commit to that, and then let that mind like take a back seat, right? And just follow that experience. And then commitment too, what we don't realize about commitment, it's not like you just commit and like, that's that. It's like we usually have cycles to things. Like there's a natural end to things, and it's okay to like one day say, wow, this really doesn't feel right for me anymore, and I'm gonna now transition and move on. But that's not the same as like switching from, you know, one thing to the next haphazardly. Right. So that's an example.
that's super helpful. And I totally cut you off as you were in the middle of explaining.
Just to like wrap it up, you know, put a little bow on it, is that, you know, based on your birth information, you know, the gene keys has 64 different variations of these keys, right? A lower frequency and these higher frequencies. And you have like 11 in your profile based on your birth info that are likely to show up in your life. And they all have like sort of a different meaning and how they show up. And so it's a very like personalized kind of, you know, roadmap to explore and system to explore, but ultimately they're just these words. And why I love that is because language makes the world go round, right? Language gives us meaning for things. And so if I was experiencing half-heartedness, but I don't name it, like I can't give it a name, then it's hard to recognize the pattern, right? And how it shows up in your life. So I love the system because it gives you, it makes you able to name what's already you're probably experiencing. So then you can like take back control over it and recognize, ooh, this is a half-hearted moment. I know that it's asking me to commit, like let's buckle down. Yeah. And it just like gives you that power back.
Mm. Okay. Wait. So you said there's 46 gene keys. Is that what you said?
Sorry, 64.
Oh, 64. Okay. So 64 gene keys, meaning, I want to see if I can understand this. Meaning, what is each gene key? Like, is that a personality trait or is that the shadow that you were talking about?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Like great, great question. So, the gene keys is like, basically, imagine these just like spheres, right? These circles, there's 64 of them. Each one of these spheres has like two, well, technically three, but we're going to keep it simple. So like two of these frequencies that expression can be in. So again, like it has a shadow based frequency. That's like that lower victim fear based. Mm-hmm. And then it has a higher frequency. That's that gift hidden within it. Mm. And so each one of these, like keys is just meant to help you unlock like that higher expression and higher purpose within yourself. Now, how it shows up in the system is like each of those, you know, the shadow and the gift are just words like that correspond to each other. And in the system, if you were to like buy the Gene Keys book, there's like a deep explanation about what that shadow means and like where it comes from like a primitive perspective and kind of like that spiritual perspective, and then the gift and what that really means. And so it's not like a personality trait so much as it is just a word to describe that frequency that you would be embodying, if that makes sense.
And is it based on, so it being based on your birthday, very much like human design, is it that like these are the lessons that you are meant to learn that chose you? I guess I'm curious because if it is based on birthday, I'm trying to imagine if I were to walk myself through, I'm like, okay, so my birthday is January 6th, blah, blah, blah. Would it kind of give me a layout of like, okay, these are your gene keys, meaning like this is the shadow side, and then this is like the enlightened version. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Yes. The way that I like to like think about it is that like human design, if you're familiar listeners with that system, is like all about how you're designed to use your energy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is how you work. This is like the blueprint to how you operate. Cool.
Yeah.
Now gene keys is like, that's awesome, but this is like the shadow side of that design. And this is like the higher expression of this design, right? If you're like fully in your design, you are committed. You are not being half-hearted, right? Like you can use half-hearted as like a trigger or I should say like a sign that it's like, ooh, I'm not in alignment with my design.
Right, right.
I'm not in alignment with like.
I see how they could. Yes. I think what's compelling to me about the way you're describing this is like, I often say that our strengths are our weaknesses and our weaknesses are our strengths. Right. But when you're in the moment of weakness, it can be hard to know, like, how is this actually a strength? Like you're just busy beating yourself up. So what I think is really cool about this is that it's acknowledging that our strengths and our weaknesses are kind of one and the same. And also that when you're in the moment of weakness, or shadow or whatever, like you can latch onto like what the full expression really is. Because for example, using this half-hearted example, there's a story that can show up that shows up for me sometimes. Like I've been going through this around like, in particular think of writing projects, because there's like seven different writing projects I want to do and I'm not working on any of them. Right. And so, so I can tell a story that's like, you're just a loser who doesn't ever finish anything, but that's not helpful. Right. Or what you're saying is like, wait a minute, what is it that I actually want to commit to? And how do I follow this so that there's something I'm actually excited to show up for? And so that feels like, it literally feels like a rope to pull you out of the funky place, because it's telling you where you're supposed to be going. So
that
sounds very cool.
Yeah, I like that too. It's like, what's the lesson essentially? And I'm always looking for the lesson. Like, it's so funny. My mind, I don't know why my mind does this, but have you guys heard of strengths finders?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's this like thing that tells you what your greatest strengths are. And if you take like the free test online, it'll give you like your five greatest strengths. For me, I automatically went to, okay, that's great. But what I want to know my weakest strengths are. Like, I want to know exactly what those are, because I want to like work on those, even though that is not the point of that test. But that's kind of what I want to know, because I want to be like, well, what's the opportunity?
It's also very Capricorn.
It's very Capricorn. It's so Capricorn. I'm like, what's the expansion? What's the lesson? Where can I grow? And yes, I feel like it's like this gene keys can be like a roadmap, because that's so, I love that. It's a roadmap for being like, oh, there's a beautiful, brilliant opposite expression of this. And that's like available to me.
Yeah. Rather than something you have to just beat out of yourself. Right. Cause I think that's what a lot of us do with these shadow things.
Yeah. Right. Right. Cause it's like, if like, again, going with this half-hearted example, like if we have a half-hearted tendency and that's like the way our fear-based frequency shows up, I don't know about you, but like I internalize that as like, you're indecisive. You know, it's just like this like self-shaming judgment mm-hmm. kind of like thing. And so then the opposite society tells us is be decisive, you know, make it happen, be disciplined, right? Put all these things in place, like to like get it done. Right. And that's actually not what that half-heartedness is trying to tell us. It's trying to tell us, hey, you're not trusting that when you commit to something that's truly in alignment with you, that it's going to work out, which is why you're being spotty or like just mm-hmm. procrastinating. Cause it's, you actually feel like it's not safe to commit to mm-hmm. one or the other. There's some fear-based narrative. And so it helps you extract that and not like make me be anything that I'm not, but just get me back on track with like living in a less fear-based place, you know?
Can you give a couple other examples of these gene keys just to like round it out for people that are totally, also new exactly. to this?
I would love to hear more of what like the
sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I'll give another one that a lot of people can probably relate to, which is the shadow of force and the gift of strength. Okay. Mm. So the shadow of force is one that comes up a lot of the time where we just, there's like this deep fear-based you know, thing within us that doesn't trust in the timing of life. We were just, Kylie, you were just talking about this actually. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be shocked if this is in your chart too, where it's like, we feel like our mind makes us feel like we need to control, we need to manipulate, we need to like make things happen on our timeline because we decide that it needs to be that way for some reason. And it makes us push force, right? Like, and this was so present in my story that I told earlier, where it was like, I was just steamrolling through my body and just like was not listening and completely just was like, this is what I have to do. This is what's expected of me. And so force is of course coming from, again, a very fear-based shadow place. And so the gift in that is strength. Now that sounds like interesting, right? Like why would strength necessarily be the gift? But within the gene key, strength means deeply, deeply and wholeheartedly trusting in the timing of your own life. And what is stronger than like surrendering to that? It takes so much more strength to trust in that than it does to actually bulldoze and like push through, right? Like you have to have such a deep level of like inner self-assurance, inner stability, like trust that you will figure it out, right? That you will have the resourcefulness if something, you know what I mean? That to like let go of needing to actually make it happen on a timeline that's coming from your mind and AKA society, right?
Oh my God. I have like so much to say about this. I'm like, I'm now just incredibly curious to go find out what my gene keys are because I'm like, I feel like maybe everyone's like,
you and I
like,
both have that one.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna go ahead and guess.
Well, I was gonna say like, maybe so many people can relate, right? Cause this is very much about like the hustle mentality of like, you know, high achievers, perfectionists, like blah, 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 mm-hmm. which is also just like a result of capitalism. But that aside, what I love about this is that it's like, it's also reframing things for you in a way that like you're taking. So when I thought when I was thinking, oh, the expansion of force must be like gentleness or like letting go or something. But instead it was like, oh, strength. And then it reframed for me, or I would say reminded me of what real strength is, which is like being so deeply connected that you're strong enough to let go of control. And I'm just like, yes. my body just had a reaction to that. Cause I was like, oh yes. Like that's medicine. That's what I need to remember.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And I'll add to that and just saying like, one of the examples he gives is like, if you think of like an Olympic skater or, you know, I feel like an athlete is what's coming to mind, but even like a ballerina, right? Or somebody who's just like that good at their craft, like think about how precise like the timing has to be for them to pull something off that is like perfection, right? So that strength doesn't necessarily always have to be like literal physical strength, although it requires so much strength. It's like this deep like synchronicity with the timing of what of the art that they're doing, right? And if we were to look at life that way, like we're just sort of ebbing and flowing with where we're being led and held, it's almost like that beautiful. It's that beautiful. You know what I mean? If you just allow it to kind of unfold in that sort of way. And so he talks about how like a lot of people with that gift can often be like really naturally inclined for like sports or dance or, you know, anything that involves like music, because there's just sort of this deep inner rhythm when you're in that higher frequency with like the timing of things. And it's not like rushed or pushed or like that, you know, gymnasts, they can't just like steamroll across the floor. It needs to be such a precise like step and take off and like position of their arm. You know what I mean? And like all of that comes with just mastering the ebb and the flow of how to move through life.
It's also making me think of something I say all the time to my like business coaching clients, which I always say about sales, which is your job is never to convince anybody, because convincing is very forceful, pushing energy, right? So you're actually, if you're trying to convince someone, you're literally pushing them away, right? As yeah. opposed to like really empowered sales is when you are very strong in your offer, right? You're very confident that like, I have something magical. I know that I'm here to be of service, or if it's a, you know, if you're a service provider, fill in the blank for what your business or may be. And like, I know that the people who are right for me are going to show up for me, and you just are in that place, which is completely opposite of that, like pushing that so many of us associate with sales, right? The used car salesman model. Mm-hmm. And that we literally don't know what it looks like otherwise, but it's exactly right. This, like, I am just like totally confident in the timing of like, oh, this client isn't right for me. That's okay. The next client is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And that requires, there's like a vulnerability in that, you know, to be in that space. But when you are, man, everything works.
Yeah. And what is stronger than vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's what this is trying to say, is like, it takes so much strength to be that vulnerable, right? Yeah. It's so much easier to be like, oh, let me doggy paddle, right? Like it feels, you know, easier to doggy paddle versus like,
oh, that's so aware. Interesting.
Yeah. But it's going to come.
Yeah. It's so interesting because force only ever comes out of fear. Like you never, like that's, it's like the, they go hand in hand. Like it's a result. Force is a total result of a fear only. Cause when you're chilling, it's not even in your consciousness. You're not even thinking about forcing anything.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
What a beautiful reminder. Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Wait, can you share one more? I'm like really enjoying learning about this.
Yeah, me too. Sure. So another one is the shadow of superficiality and the gift of self-assurance. And so I really love this one. I think we'll all relate again to this as well. And this, I'll just give this disclaimer. While there are specific gene keys in your chart, we're not going to get this deep today, but every one of us embodies all 64 of these, according to the founder. So these are patterns that you may just be drawn to a gene key, no matter if it's in your profile or not. But we technically can tap into like any of these frequencies, but there are just certain ones that may be like more prevalent and more, you know,
that makes sense.
You're more conscious of. So, you know, the shadow of superficiality, this is again, coming from a fear-based place. All of the shadows are coming from a fear-based place, where you, again, you're not really quite trusting in life. And so what happens is that, I guess I should say it like this, like the fear of not really trusting in the moment of where you are and kind of like we were saying, living either in the past or very much in the future is like keeping you like superficially skimming on the surface of your life. It like, it's the shadow that keeps you like just on the edge of actually fully living, but you're not fully living, but you think you're living, but you like then start to realize that you're not, kind of dynamic. Mm-hmm. And so the shadow superficiality doesn't mean that you're superficial. It means that you're showing up superficially in your life. So like in your relationships, in your, you know, in your career path potentially, because fear is kind of keeping you from like fully plunging in and like actually just embracing that thing or, you know, where you are at in your timing. And so the gift of self-assurance is again, this like inner stability that, I mean, self-assurance is actually like my favorite word. I know people throw out confidence and stuff like that, but I think self-assurance is such a beautiful thing where it's like, you're so unshakable in who you are, where you are, you know, like your life, and how it's playing out, that there isn't this like skimming, right? Like you're deep, you're in it, you are grounded, you are there, you are present. And actually presence is like that even higher expression of that, this one. And so I think it's a beautiful, again, like sort of different interpretation of how you can just see like, wow, my relationships are actually like way more superficial than I'm allowing them to be because I'm not really self-assured in our context or our dynamic or how I'm showing up or that vulnerability again, you know? So this is just another one showing up in a different way.
Yeah, I see that. I think I see that a lot in, so I have certain clients who come to me, I think with what I would call that, which is like, and Kylie, what I've heard you say in the past about how like I think it's a perfect example, like you wanted to do coaching for a while, but you kind of like, you didn't really go all in. You were like swimming around right. it. And like, I'll have clients who come to me, like they've wanted to just like do this thing. They've wanted to go back to school, or they wanted to like finally get into a serious relationship, but they're scared. Right. So they don't ever go in. They just like wait around until like the timing is right. And of course the timing's never right.
So like waiting for an external validator to give you the self-assurance, but the truth is you never actually feel ready until you like leap in the pool and realize you could swim all along, or quickly learn to swim. Either way is fine. Do you just like, when people are talking about like, you know, if your friend is like, oh, the situation's happening at work and it's so stressful, are you just like constantly filtering it through these 64? I feel like, because I feel astrologers, I joke that astrologers like have like Google Glass. You guys remember Google Glass? And that was the thing. And they just are constantly seeing everybody's chart. Is your version of that, that you're just like, some part of your brain is constantly like, that's this gene key, that's this gene key?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I'm like, ooh, you done and I used to be like so obnoxious with my family when I first found human design, because I feel like that one's a little bit easier to sort of like catch on with. Like gene keys is obviously, like, as you can see, like more dense, more like of this heavier kind of system. And so I would just like constantly be like, ooh, you're a manifesting generator. Like, oh, you're like, and I would just diagnose people through these like lenses, but then gene keys just took it to a whole nother level. Cause now I'm like, oh, you're shadow for you. Very prominent, you know? But definitely.
So can you talk a little bit about how you use this? I'm assuming you use gene keys with your clients, right? Like in your work. And then do you use that in addition to human design as well?
Yeah, I use them like as that sister system sort of process that I laid out for you guys, where it was like, we do first learn about like, okay, how are you built? How are you wired? What from this system do you really resonate with in terms of how you work? Mm-hmm. And then we explore like, all right, what's the shadow version of this design that's showing up in your life right now? Mm-hmm. And then here's the roadmap out of that. And we use the gift as sort of that I don't want to say destination, but like that place that we're transcending to in our work. So yeah, it's deeply intertwined.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this sounds like some serious work. Cause then you talk about self-mastery too. And you have like these four things, like processes that you take people through. It sounds incredible.
Yeah. And so it sounds like, it's so interesting, right? Because it's like, I think I've realized so much in like doing this work more and more and more, is that like, yes, I like name these four systems, right? Like mindset, identity, purpose, and energy, but they're so intertwined, right? Yeah. Like they're so interrelated that I like gene keys sort of grounds all of it for me in like the work that I do and like the lens that I take with my clients. But then like there are offshoots and like different things within each of those sort of dimensions that we play around in. But going back to like even your original question about using the gene keys in my work, like when it comes to like mindset, when it comes to your emotional state, I mean, shadow work is so big, right? I feel like this is being thrown out a lot now around like the spiritual and mindset space, where, you know, for those of you who don't know what a shadow is, like your shadow is this part of your mind that holds like the suppressed parts of you that you determined along the way that aren't, you know, that people told you aren't good enough, that you don't want to be, that you shouldn't be, all these things. And so they're like characteristics or parts of our like authenticity that we deemed as bad or wrong.
Yeah,
exactly. That we rejected. So I firmly believe, so that's like Carl Jung, right? Like discovered this concept, and the fact that like, whether you're aware of it or not, it's casting a shadow wherever you go in your life, right? Because it's directly influencing what you do or do not say, how you do or do not act, right? Because you are, it's so fear-based. You don't want to be considered these things.
Yeah. What you reject is actually what you are like being imprisoned by.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so I see that direct correlation with like going back to how I say I work with my clients on like rewriting the subconscious, you know, mind and kind of shifting those beliefs. We need to deeply understand like this shadow complex. And I use the gene key shadow frequency to help like inform what those words are that are locked away, right? Like what those parts of us that we're suppressing, because we were kind of always meant to move through this shadow. Mm. So for example, if I have the shadow frequency of half-heartedness, I probably locked away, like I said, like, ooh, I'm calling myself flaky. I'm calling myself indecisive, like all these parts of me that are bad, but like, whoa, like it's actually like, I'm extremely discerning about what I do or do not want to do. And I'm actually somebody who feels like the whole range of emotions before I actually act and make a decision. So that's like that higher committed essence. And so how can we like let go or like own some of those shadow words by like seeing them through the lens of the gift rather than, you know, the way that we can get caught up in like those words that we reject in ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is so cool. I love it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something earlier as like an offhand comment, but it just kind of my ears perked up where you were talking about purpose, and it sounded like you have a different definition of purpose. And I was wondering if we could revisit that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry. And again, I'm going to again piggyback because I feel like
this is something we do a lot.
Yeah, this is something that we do. It just makes
it easier. Two halves of a brain. Yeah, so,
exactly. But because I think you, like prior to getting on the show, I think maybe you mentioned this in your form, like, do you help people with purpose? Is this like something that is a part of the work that you do?
Yes, absolutely. It's a huge part of what I do. Because I think that oftentimes when you approach, you know, mastering your mind and mastering your body and rewriting these beliefs and stuff, it's so much more powerful when there's a directive of where this is being applied to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what is this all for? Why are you doing this in the first place? And again, this can mm-hmm. be like in whatever area of life that speaks to that person at that time. But like, that is such a huge part of the conversation for sure. Okay. And yeah, to kind of like rewind to your question, Kylie, about, you know, my definition of purpose. Yeah. So purpose I feel like really come to be something that we think is what we do, right? Mm-hmm. Like this very much like what we do, what our career is, you know, and I believe that those are vehicles of purpose. Those are ways in which our purpose gets expressed and how it manifests. But I believe purpose first and foremost is an emotional state. Mm-hmm. So how do you want to be? Because think about this for a second. Let me finish my sentence. How do you want to be feeling? Just got so excited. So think about this for a second. Like, why, let's say you say your purpose is to be a teacher. Like, what are you getting from being a teacher that makes it your purpose, right? It's an emotion. Mm. It's a way that you feel when you do it. You feel competent. You feel alive. You feel, you know, fill in the blank. You feel like sincere joy, if that's what it is. But there's an emotional state that you're seeking to like experience that is really what that vehicle happens to be providing you. And this is why I think we can also like really drown sometimes in the purpose conversation. Cause it's like, oh my God, what's my purpose? You know, like, mm-hmm. where do I find it? And it seems like it's this like missing like thing that we need to do.
Yeah. Or that it's so definitive. It's like, you've got one purpose, you got to choose that. Right. And then you're like, you have to be right. You don't want to fuck it up.
Right. And the thing that I'm loving about this definition too, is like you earlier talked about how things move cyclically. So you might want to be a teacher because you love like the feeling of like being of service, like gives you a certain kind of emotional experience that you enjoy. And you might reach a point where like the cycle of teaching is completed and you're adrift Yes. because you've identified it as, well, I'm a teacher, but really Right. like, I remember actually talking to someone who's a nurse over the summer who was going through this, who was like feeling drawn to like start to do all this different work. She's like, but my purpose has always been like my life purpose is to be a nurse. And there was this mm-hmm. kind of identity crisis happening. So I think this framing is beautiful because it's like, well, what's the emotional, your purpose has always been this emotional thing. And maybe now it's asking to be fulfilled in a different vehicle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh,
that's beautiful.
I love that.
Yeah.
Right. Cause if we're like constantly, if the only true constant is change and we're always evolving and like, especially in the spiritual realm, right? Like that is such a part of why we're here, is to continue to evolve. How can we expect that we're going to hold this like one very, you know, finite purpose that entire time? It's like so, you know, unrealistic. And I think that's why, especially, you know, younger generations have just started to like burst through some of those structural societal things of like staying with a job forever and ever and ever until you retire and like doing one thing forever and ever and ever. And, you know, those older generations sometimes look down on us, but I think it's like the most natural thing in the world to constantly pivot in your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is so great. I love this so much. I love the way that you asked this question, Kylie. And I love this answer because it's so liberating. It finally gives people some like it's agency and also like permission to like, I think, explore different ways of being, different things to do, trying on different things. Cause I feel very passionate about this because I think I get at least not as much anymore, but still sometimes people will trickle in and be like, I want help finding my purpose. Mm. And they're really thinking about like, they feel, and I get it. I have a lot of compassion for that. They feel really lost. Cause they're like, oh, I need to like look for that one thing. And then we have to have this whole conversation where it's like, I don't feel like I'm serving you by telling you that you need to be finding one thing to do. Like, that's not the work that I do. Like, but I've never, and I, you know, I have a, a different definition of purpose, but they're kind of similar, but I've never heard it described this way before. And it's so simple. It's like a feeling. How do you want to feel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I ask a question, or were you going to ask a question? Sorry.
No, I'm just so stoked about this. That's all. I'm like really excited about it.
So in your experience using kind of this framework to define purpose, does everyone have the same purpose? Like, does everyone come in and when you're like, what's your purpose from an emotion? Is everyone like, oh, I just want to feel happy? Or are there different flavors of purpose?
Mm. Such a good question, right? Because it's like, oh, well, like, yeah, wouldn't we all be seeking like the same emotions, basically? So yeah, they're absolutely different flavors. And what I will say is, like, of course, there's overlap naturally too, because you can imagine that a lot of us are seeking very similar feelings. But what I will say too is that, like, how can I possibly say if my experience of joy is the same as your experience of joy, mm-hmm. Kylie, right? Or the same as your experience of joy, Eva. And so it may be the same word, but it's really about the essence of what that feeling and experience is like for you, because that we might both have joy, but they can be very different, like, manifestations of that in a lot of ways.
Oh my God, this is so juicy. I love it so much.
I know.
Okay. I have to ask, I'm gonna have to ask Chrissy, because I think I want to take something and maybe make it an example, but I guess my initial question is, how would you define your purpose, your feeling? Like, what's the core feeling, and how would you explain that? And how do you experience that? Yeah.
Mm, so good. So I would say my purpose emotion, and again, I want to have the caveat that the way I break this down with my clients too, is that we think about our purpose emotion within different areas of life. So mm-hmm. the way I want to feel in my career might be different from how I want to feel in my relationship. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if I were just to talk about my career, my purpose emotion is feeling alive, which is super interesting, right? Because like, that's not necessarily one of those emotions we toss around a lot, but it for me is so distinct and clear, because when I am feeling alive, it's just this, it's like, I can just never stop. Like, there's just like a never stop energy. It's like, oh my gosh, I am so invested in this. Like, time doesn't matter. Time ceases to exist. It's like this sort of almost just like activated energy in my cells when I'm doing it. It just feels like this buzz. And I was like, that's when I'm just in flow, you know? Mm-hmm. And and I have like such a distinct difference between that and when I'm just so bogged down and there's so much resistance in what I'm doing. And it just like feels like I'm trying so, it's so effortful. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's just alive has such a distinct meaning for me. And I've been able to now guide myself to my sense of purpose through what has made me feel that. And I've had very distinct moments of when that gets activated in me. And I'm like, ooh, yep, there's something here. Gene Keys being one of them. I like found the system and I was like, okay, I need to do something with this, because I don't know why I can't stop reading it. I can't stop looking at it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And I just like want to shout like to anyone, cause I know I don't know. I feel like there's people who are going to listen to this who are also confused about their purpose. And I want to shout from the rooftops, like my opinion anyway, is that your purpose is never gonna be, it's like, you're not doing something wrong if you don't have your like career nailed down.
Like, yeah, that's just capitalism. That's assigning your value according to the money you make. Sorry.
No, totally. But yes, that's exactly it. I'm so glad that you're saying that. And I think there's so much, I just feel, yeah, I guess, again, it's compassion. I feel so bad for the people who feel like they're not contributing anything because they haven't found their quote unquote, like boxed in purpose.
But I also feel like having had some version of that experience before, like, I think part of what is driving that, we interpret it as I haven't found my purpose, right? Like, I remember having moments of like, I'm not supposed to be a sales rep forever and thinking that I had to go find this external purpose. But what I think is really powerful about your framing, Chrissy, is that it's really about like for a while I was seeking this external validator, right? But what you're saying is like, which is very much what you always teach too, Eva, is like, you have to start from within, and then that actually will get you to what you're trying to experience, which I also observe, right? Like, by when I shifted to become a manager and got to actually support other people, all of a sudden I started to actually enjoy my life again, because there was some, I don't know that this would be my number, I think I'm too selfish for this to be my like number one emotional driver, but there was some part of me that was really loved being of service, and that was like fulfilled. But the driver, like, so coaching and managing had an overlap because it was fulfilling this emotional driver. So yeah. If you're listening and you're feeling, so Chrissy, if someone is listening and they're having this sense of like, okay, I'm having a crisis of purpose and I'm all in, I'm ready to kind of start thinking about it from an emotional place. Obviously they should just call you and work with you one-on-one, but in the lead up to that, what kind of tools or framing or questions would you give them to kind of start to get some clarity on that?
Yeah. So good. So what I would say first of all is just like both of you said, so I'm just going to reiterate, like your purpose can come in so many different vehicles. Like you may feel a deep sense of purpose through motherhood, you know, and that's okay if that's where that is, you know, and you can have a job that you like, but it's not necessarily where you derive purpose from. You also could feel a deep sense of purpose with like volunteer work or things that you do, you know, in extracurricular kind of fashion. And that's like all just as purposeful and like meaningful as like career. I just feel like that's usually like the central place that mm-hmm. we start. But if you're feeling like this general existential crisis of like, I don't really know what I'm doing with like my time or what I want to do with my life kind of thing. One of the places that I like really love to start to kind of get like tapped into what that may be is what makes you like, so a couple things, sorry, I'm like going back a little bit. So two things. One is like, when was the last time you felt purposeful or purpose driven? Like, can you think of a time where you felt like needed or like you were applying yourself or that something like really just brought you a sense of like, you know,
like fulfillment?
I'm here. Yeah. Fulfilled. That's the word. Fulfilled. Fulfillment. And like, can you think of any time, even if it was like years ago, you know, in a different context, and just start to extract clues of like what you were experiencing that in that moment, like what were those primary emotions? What were some of the things that you were doing? Because to your point, Kylie, like clues really, really help, right? Like it may be, again, you don't know what industry or what that's going to look like necessarily, but you can at least say, wow, when I was guiding a group of people, I just like felt really in my zone. Or like, oh, when I was like actually behind the scenes and like working on things on my computer and like doing art and I don't know, graphic design, I was just like in heaven. I could have sat on that computer all stinking day, you know? And just starting to extract some of those clues from your past is really, really key, because I think like, especially like the younger you were, when you think back, mm-hmm. the more like pure and in the moment mm-hmm. and present we often were. And I think that that has so much wealth of information in it that our older selves started to like clog with society and pressure and all of that good stuff. So that would be where I would start. And then if you're talking about like, what is my purposeful vocation? If you're trying to get a little bit more specific, one of my favorite questions I've ever heard asked is, what makes you compassionately angry? So what makes you compassionately angry? Like what fires you up that you see that there could be a change for, or that you really feel like called to contribute to, that like it's that compassionate anger, right? Like you're mad that this exists, right? Maybe it's like a system that didn't serve you, or that, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like how do you want to contribute, or how does that sort of fuel your fire to get involved? And that can usually be a place where you can find a big sense of meaning in what you're doing. If you kind of lead and kind of explore what comes of that question. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that question. I'm like, I'm trying to think. I like went, my brain immediately went to, what makes me compassionate?
I know. I want to know your answer.
I think there's so, there's like so many, but actually the first one that came up was like, what makes me compassionately angry is, how do I even describe this? I think it's like self-generated suffering that I think, meaning, I mean, this is something that we can all relate to. It's like, all this suffering that we're experiencing that we don't have to be experiencing, that's sort of, we bring it upon ourselves because we are so mean to ourselves, because we're so doubtful. It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, we all know this, right? For me, at least, like I spent so many years in this very hateful, self-deprecating relationship with myself. And my journey has been one of very much like self-love and coming back to myself. And now when I look back or I read my old journals, I'm like, oh my God, I feel so bad for you, girl. And I'm so mm-hmm. mad that I like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that I was such an asshole and that I wasted all this time. And there's this like this whole other beautiful way to live life. And so now I can tell that that is such a huge motivator in like the work that I do, right? When the women come to me and I'm like, I see that. I'm just like, no, we're done with that. We're done. We're going to evolve into a new way of being. So yeah, I could probably come up with a bunch of other things too, but that, I don't know. What about you? What about you, ladies? I want to hear about your answers.
Chrissy, what makes you compassionately angry?
Yeah. So first of all, Eva, I want to say, like, I love that. And again, like, that's when you know that you can really find a sense of meaning and purpose because you've been through it before. Like, no one is better suited to then support others around that because you have that compassionate anger to be like, no, I'm getting you beyond this. I know what you're capable of. Similar to you, I have probably a little bit of a laundry list of things, but I think that one thing that really makes me compassionately angry is just the fact that we, education, and this is what I mean by that, is like we grow up like not even remotely having an idea mm-hmm. of like how to, like I always use the word, but like master our mind and body, like be the one in control of our lives. We don't understand how powerful we are, and we're not educated to like understand that on any level. And so knowing how much time was spent in suffering because of that for me, I just have like a really strong compassionate anger about like going back and redefining how education is presented around how you can empower yourself mm-hmm. to be the one, I don't want to say in control, because of course like life happens, but we're the ones who can influence the way that we experience our lives. And so that really fires me up and of course like fuels what I do big time.
Yeah. I love that. Me too. Yeah. That's also yeah. incredibly beautiful.
Yeah. It's funny because this topic's on my mind because my son, I have a 4-year-old who's like really, his like main question recently is like, is that real or not? He's like really compelled. He's really struggling with like, yesterday's like, mom, are characters on TV real? And like, basically what he's trying to figure out is imagination real or not? That's what's actually under like driving his question. So like,
ooh, that's a hard question.
Wow.
Right? That's a weird, that's like an existential spiritual question.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm like, well, you got a mom who reads the Akashic Records for a living. So like, yes, imagination is real. Right. And so, but how do I get that, get create space for that in a way that like feels accessible. So anyways, well, it's interesting watching him navigate. And there's a little part of me that's like afraid that he'll lose something. Cause I won't know how to like create the container for him to hold on to it, you know? So anyways, I very much agree with what you're saying. Cause I'm like watching something happen that I'm like, okay, here we go. Anyway. Yeah. And I also say, I love this. The other thing I love about this compassionately angry framing is that there's a sense of empowered, like in both of your stories, what you're saying that you're empowered. The thing that's making you angry is like, cause I know it can be different versus mm-hmm. like, you know, there's plenty of things to be angry about where like, we just feel really hopeless. Mm-hmm. And so this compassionate piece feels like the differentiator is like, because you know, you know, it can be different and you know that you can in some small way make it different.
Such a good point. Yeah. Cause when you're yeah. not yes. empowered, you don't feel compassionate about it. You just feel overwhelmed by it.
Right. Right.
Just mad. Just pissed
yeah.
off.
You're just yeah. mad. Yeah. yeah. I think my answer would be, I mean, I also have a lot, but the first thing that comes to mind is like, I think early motherhood in particular is such a crucible for transformation and like spiritual awakening. And we make absolutely no space for women to go through that transformation. All of our narratives. Oh, I can feel the heat rising in my body as I'm talking about.
There it is. There it is.
So I will keep this short because I could like, you know, this is my TED talk, but like all of our energy is about like getting back to normal, getting your body. It's all of this obsession with returning to something that literally doesn't exist. And all of it, and also like asking about the baby, but there is no space for women to let themselves unravel and meet this new self. And so there's depression, there's anxiety, there's like incredible isolation. And it actually is actually the space for incredible gift of realizing that you are infinitely connected to divine love. And because that's what's flowing through you, which is why you're so fucking overwhelmed because you've never experienced love like this before. So anyway, I think that's what I'm compassionately angry about.
Wow.
Oh my God. I'm just
so good.
Is this like, I just feel like I want to say, I don't know if this is appropriate. I just feel like I love us right now.
I know.
I know that just sounds so ridiculously pompous, but I just love this conversation and this space.
Mm-hmm. When we get to have parties again, this is the question I'm fucking asking everybody.
Yeah. Such a good party question.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. Good. Before we go to our joy question, was there anything that maybe we didn't ask you that we should have asked you, Chrissy?
This has been such a rich, beautiful, ever-flowing conversation. I've just been so excited to like follow its natural, you know, ebb and flow. But no, I think you guys have been so gracious in asking so many different questions. And I feel like I've been able to share like a lot about what I do and my journey that got me here. So I just really appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Well, then let's move into joy. What's one thing that's bringing you joy right now, Chrissy?
So, now that, you know, I'm a few years out of healing my chronic pain, I reconnected with dance, especially this past year. And, like as much as I'm not defined by it anymore, it's been so clear to me how that like void was just really taking its toll on me. And so I am just dancing up a freaking storm. And there were so many excuses, right? I was like, I can't find classes. I don't have the time. And now like, COVID, the pandemic was so beautiful because it's like, open your damn laptop, find like a program, right? Like, you know, figure it out. And it now a lot of things think, goodness, but even were there before, but have like come online. Right. So there's more options than ever before. And it was just like, move the couch, you know, make the space. Mm-hmm. And it's been such a blessing. Like I feel like a part of me has been reinvigorated. So I've just been back on the dance scene and I love it.
Oh my God. That is so great. Can I ask what kind of dance you do or like? I'm just curious because I have such admiration for dancers or just anyone who can move their bodies in such coordinated ways and like look so beautiful as you do it. But yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah, thank you. So I grew up doing all the styles, all the things. But my absolute favorite are hip hop and tap, which are interesting, right? Because they're very different.
Yeah.
But the syncopation and the musicality that you need for both of those, that like to pull off the expression of it, is my absolute favorite thing. Like I feel like music just like courses through me. Like when I'm driving and listening, I'm like choreographing things in my head, which is probably not safe, but it's just like a part of my being. So yeah, those are my two favorite. And actually like tap was my big, big, big thing growing up. I like went to the World Tap Championships when I was younger and it was such a like separate life of mine, but I'm like bringing it back I have like my little wood floor that I tap on now in my apartment.
That's so awesome. I'm really happy for you. That sounds really
thank
beautiful.
You. Yeah.
There's nothing like reclaiming something too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reclaiming. And maybe even rebeginning like a new relationship, right? Like it's
100%. Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. It's like the most beautiful thing. Cause it was something that I really like I grieved. I like parted ways with it. And so it really is like welcoming in a whole new thing. And I love it so much because now it's not rooted in what it was a lot when I grew up, which was competition and, you know, judgment and, you know, like there were judges literally and, you know, all of this stuff. Now it's like just expression. Like I get to just express myself and it's really amazing.
Oh my God. That's so beautiful. Like, yeah, it could be your own. And I could just have a whole conversation about dance. We'll have to like have a different conversation about dance another day. Cause that in itself is a spiritual act right there.
100%. We're all dancers. I truly believe that.
Yeah. I believe that too.
You should see my kids dancing. My son is like newly obsessed with breakdancing. Do you remember that when you were a kid and you like discovered that there's a kind of dancing where you're like on the floor a lot? He just like literally spent all weekend like, would be like, Desi, do you want to go like have a snack? He'd be like, no, I got to do more breakdancing. And then he was getting all sweaty and so he was like stripping his clothes.
Oh my god.
So he's like dressed in like sweatpants and no shirt, like rolling on the floor, calling it breakdancing.
But I feel like that's what we all have at our core. Like that's who we just are, and then we like forget. That's so great.
Yeah.
Okay. Kylie, what's one thing that's bringing you joy right now?
Aside from my son's newfound love of quote unquote breakdancing. Being outside in the winter. And I say that as someone who like pretty consistently struggles with seasonal depression and like constantly is like, I hate the winter. It's the worst season. I just have to get through it. Like, I always think to my husband, like someday let's just like be the kind of people who like live somewhere else in the winter. And, but with COVID and like two small children, I just was like, I can't afford to not get the fuck outside as often as possible. Like it's actually not an option for my mental health or for you know, my kids' sanity or collectively. And so I've like gone out. I like am making a point of going outside. I try to go every day. It's not happening every day, but that's like what I've that's like the bar that I'm aiming for. And it turns out that I maybe don't hate winter. I mean, it helps that it's been a very mild winter so far, but like, you know, like today we went for like, I got through my kids in the car. We like got muffins and then like went for a long walk and like they threw rocks in the water and like, it was really nice. Whereas like normally I would have, you know, I don't know, found something else to do inside, but it turns out winter's not as bad if you can just, for so far, you know, ask me in a couple of weeks, but so far I'm like having a moment of like, oh, this might not be so terrible. So, I'm grateful for that, being forced to get outside and realizing, oh, I can hack it. And it's kind of nice even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that. How
about you, Eva? What's bringing you joy?
So I have something very specific because it just happened. One of my good friends, Jackie, she's pregnant and she's about to have her first child. And we had me and my like really close girlfriends all from, I've known them since like third grade to fifth grade. Like wow. We all sort of like known them for these, like my core group of homegirls, like in yeah. LA. Wow. Anyway, so we had a Zoom baby shower for her and it was the best. My friends are so creative. They just, so I live in Arizona, so I was far away from and I have two friends still in LA and they printed out life-size pictures of us, like life-size human versions of all of us, and then put them in her backyard. And we had this whole surprise like tea party and they set up this whole tea tray. And then my other friend sent us these like fasteners, which are these like hats that you wear at tea parties, and sent us like cookies and jam and clotted cream. And we all got on this call and surprised her. She had like no idea it was like, coming, and she was like crying. And and then we had, so there were seven of us with uninterrupted 2.5 hours of talk time, which is huge because they all have kids. They all, with the exception of me and Jackie, they all have two or more kids, I think. So that never happens. You know, like that never happens anymore, that you can get all these mamas together and have uninterrupted time to just like catch up and all this stuff. So it felt really nourishing and like so nice to be able to connect with my friends in this super fun way. And I was like, medicine, right? Like feeling socially connected.
I love that. Amazing. Yeah.
So if you're listening, girls, shout out to y'all. I love you.
It's incredible. I so much creativity has gone on like during this time of just finding ways to connect with each other. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really awesome. Cool.
Okay, so Chrissy, for all the people who want to understand their shadow gene keys, who want to figure out their life purpose, who like, you know, feel super drawn to work with you, how are they going to find you? Where do they go? What should they do?
Yeah, I say head over to my website first and foremost. You can find everything, anything there. So just www.chrissypapetti.com. Everything's really easy. My handle is Chrissy Papetti on Instagram, Chrissy Papetti on Facebook. You can just type in Chrissy Papetti and you can really find me on all the platforms.
Perfect.
So yeah, I would just head there, but I would love to connect with anyone over this conversation. It's just, there's so many layers to it and I'm so passionate about it. So I'm excited to connect with potential listeners.
Yay. Yeah. But you mentioned before the call, you do genius readings, right?
Yes. Yes. So on my website, you'll see there's like a bar at the top of my heading that says you're genius. And so you can find my genius offerings. My genius readings are usually that first stop and they're my absolute favorite things because it's just that deep dive into your profile. Someone who can really guide you through what you need to know and where to start with it all. And it's just such like an awakening type of experience.
Yeah. That sounds like fun. Yeah.
Yay. Right. That sounds amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah. This was really great.
Thank you both. This was so fun. I really appreciate you having me on.